Let's go to Australia to correspondent Karen Middleton in Canberra. Morning, Canberra.
morning, Catherine.
I'm sure they all tune into us every Wednesday.
Yeah, sure. No doubt.
What is happening with some of the restrictions, particularly in Victoria?
Well, there's a bit of good news. As of midnight tonight, for people in regional Victoria, the state of Victoria, where Melbourne, the capital, is still in a very serious lockdown, they're the only state now in Australia facing these kinds of restrictions. And the figures in regional Victoria have been such that the Premier has been able to announce this easing of restrictions, which means that in regional centres, they'll be able to move around a bit more from tonight than they have been. They'll be able to have gatherings of 10 people outdoors. They'll be able to go and sit down in restaurants in very small numbers and visit each other's homes, which is a big change given how long they've been in lockdown. This, as we've spoken about before, is a sort of second wave that's passed mostly through Melbourne and the surrounding regions, but it's affected the whole state of Victoria, and it's really prompted these border wars that we can talk about in a minute, but that we've talked about before as well. But unfortunately for Melbourne, they are not quite there yet. The Premier is saying he hopes he can start to ease things from late September, maybe around September 28 in the city and metro areas. But at the moment, they are still in what we're calling stage four lockdown, which involves evening curfews and very severe restrictions on movements. There have been a little bit of movement on that for intimate partners, something that got the Premier into a bit of an embarrassing conversation with journalists last week when he had to sort of describe the nature of those relationships, which he felt a little awkward about doing. But look, in the end, Victoria was heading in the right direction, they would say. We had a day yesterday, the 24 hours to yesterday morning, where there were no deaths recorded in Victoria, which was a great relief, and only 50 new cases of infection. But the Premier wants... He's unveiled a roadmap for easing restrictions, but he wants it to get down to an average fortnight average of five deaths. So we're still quite a long way. Sorry, five infections. So we're still quite a long way from that, but heading in the right direction.
What of these border fights that are going on?
Well, we've still got border fights both among the states and territories internally, and then there's pressure mounting about the external border as well. Queensland going to an election in October, and Queensland's been in focus particularly by the federal government. It was all sweetness and light for a long time here. The Prime Minister had set up what they called a national cabinet involving the state and territory leaders and himself, which was an unusual construction, building on a construction that they had where they met once a year, really, to talk about things that relate to the federal and state jurisdictions. But they've been working quite well until recently, and now it's sort of all come undone over the borders. There was a case of a young woman from Canberra where we've had no new infections for more than 2 months, and where basically the virus seems to have disappeared, fingers crossed. She was trying to see her father, who was dying and then who died in Queensland, and the Queensland government refused to let her go to his funeral, and the Prime Minister intervened and appealed for the Premier there to ease that finding, but she refused. It got a lot of attention. It's putting some political pressure on her, and it's really highlighting the situation we've got with all of these borders. But Scott Morrison is actually facing pressure himself from people stranded overseas. The government's implemented a cap on the number of people who can come into Australia. Australian citizens have a right of return under the Constitution, but this cap of the numbers, which are the numbers each international airport can manage every day. And, of course, the Victorians have said they can't take any at the moment because of the situation there. So that's one airport that's out of the mix. It means, effectively, that people are joining a very long queue to get home. That the restrictions on numbers at airports means a restriction on numbers on the flights. So in the case of numbers flying into Sydney, Qantas's flights have only got 30 people on those massive international aircraft, which is really economically unviable. So they are only taking people who are paying business and first-class fares, which means if you're an ordinary person trying to get home, willing to pay economy class, you keep getting cancelled off lists. So the pressure is mounting on Scott Morrison to try and do something, pardon me, for those people as well. Interestingly, Catherine, we've seen some research in the papers today coming from medical scientists here in Australia, including the Deputy Chief Medical Officer that is finding that we may have an undetected level of infection that has been much higher than we knew about. And in fact, that there could have been 60,000 infections undetected in Australia. People have been tested for antibodies, and the suggestion of with the presence of antibodies is that they've had the virus. So we may have a higher level of infection than we realise, either circulating in the past or still circulating. So, of course, as you well know over there, with things having flared up a second time, things can get worse after they seem to be getting better. So we're all having to be very cautious.
Now, you've got some whales who've gone a bit off course.
Yeah. Look, this is amazing, really. In anyone who's familiar with the Northern Territory, which is our tropical sort of frontier land north, would know there's an incredible series of inland waterways, some of which have very large ocean mouths and are salt at least partway up. But a pod of humpback whales have been detected in the waterways in the East Alligator River in the Northern Territory, which is a crocodile infested. It's one of those muddy brown rivers that you can't see the bottom of, and people out on a boat on the river a week or so ago detected a 16-metre humpback and a couple of others lolling about in the water. Scientists say they've never seen this before. They can't explain how the whales would have got so far up the river, and they were quite a distance. It's prompted the authorities in the Northern Territory to set up a no-go zone of about 30 kilometres inland from the ocean to protect these whales. They seem to have taken a wrong turn on the way to Antarctica, quite a considerable wrong turn, as it turns out. But there's a risk of stranding because there's a lot of sandbars in that first part of the river, and there's concern that the larger whale may get stranded. In the last couple of days, it seems like two of the three that were spotted have managed to get themselves back out to sea, but the third one hasn't yet. And, of course, if the whale gets stranded, it'd have to be a target for the crocodiles that live in that river that prey on anything that sits about too long in the waters there. So it's been a bit of a welcome distraction from coronavirus news, but a strange phenomenon, whales lolling about in a Northern Territory river.
Yeah, I don't know if a sensible crocodile would take on a whale. I don't even want to think about that.
That point has been made. It would only really be if it got into distress that they might exploit that.
Yeah. So the Prime Minister now is saying that it's going to be a gas-led recovery. Is this part of a big sort of think big type approach?
Yeah, well, the government, you know, is very much trying to portray itself as a government of action, and that is getting on with things, that the pandemic isn't stopping the government. We were meant to have a budget in May that was put off until October, so we're about 3 weeks out from the federal budget now, so we're starting to see a bit of an outline of policy for that budget framework, and the Prime Minister is calling this a gas-led recovery. He wants to bring energy prices down. He's very focused on consumer prices and how much people pay for their energy, and he says this is the solution. He wants to build a gas plant in New South Wales and underwrite a range of other gas projects elsewhere as part of a move to get away from the use of so much coal, but also as a transition on the way to something else. He's not a fan of transitioning too quickly to renewable energy, but it is attracting some criticism that Australia is going to lean too hard on gas, that gas is still not the cleanest of energy sources. And there's concern that some people with gas interests are influencing the government. The Prime Minister has said that he's had meetings with people in the gas industry, and he's now come out with this gas plan. But, you know, the critics are saying there should be greater focus on renewable energy. So it's a controversial move. We're likely to see the colour of his money in the federal budget, some tens of millions of dollars as a starting point, at least, for studies on where these gas underwriting projects might be. But energy, as you know, has been a long and very fraught issue in this country, linked to climate change action or the lack thereof. And it would seem the debate will continue for a while yet, with this emphasis on what is still closer to the fossil fuel range of fuels than to the renewable energy side.
Well, of course, memories of January and February feel like a long time ago, don't they? But
not so long ago with fires re-emerging and the warming weather here. But yes, you're right. Yeah. It's funny how we have short memories.
Well, speaking of memories and what innocent times it seems, some 20 years ago now since one of the great Olympic Games.
Well, the greatest, if you believed Juan Antonio Samaranch at the time. We're all very fond of trotting that out. It's the best games ever, he said. Olympic Games, Sydney 2000. Yes, it was 20 years ago, which there's a lot of reminiscing going on around here at the moment. There's a special on ABC about Cathy Freeman's great victory, which was actually really quite a moment for Australians. Cathy's the former Indigenous former athlete who ran the 400 metres in a bodysuit and won a gold medal, which really galvanised Australians and was a moment that most people remember from those Olympics. The other moment that most people remember is Eric the Eel Musambani, the great swimmer from Equatorial Guinea who'd never been in an Olympic swimming pool at the time. He swam 100 metres. He just about drowned. He got a sort of wild card into the Olympics, found himself in the final when the two others in his heat broke and were disqualified and ended up being an incredible crowd favourite who cheered him on just for his sheer determination. Actually, the Sydney Morning Herald went and found him recently, and he's training Olympic athletes. He's still living in Equatorial Guinea. He trained very hard after the Sydney Olympics, and apparently he does a cracking good time now. So he's turned himself into a genuine athlete and a contender, which is a lovely story 20 years on from what was one of the great highlights of those Olympic Games.
It really was. As I said, more recent times. We just survived Y2K and we thought that was going to be as bad as it got. Right, Karen.
Yeah, ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, indeed. Thanks very much, Karen Middleton, our Australia correspondent.